From the heartland of America, focused on God, family, and country, the mouthpiece of the Midwest, this is Dale Carter's America.
All right, Gary McNamara from Red Eye Radio. Welcome to Dale Carter's America.
Thank you so much, Dale. It is an honor and a privilege to be here.
My honor. I'm thrilled to have you here. And you and I have talked many times on Facebook. You know that when I'm driving to work at 2:30 in the morning to do my morning show at KFKF here in Kansas City, that I'm listening to you and Eric kind of filling in some gaps, giving us some stuff to talk about on the podcast, things to do on the morning show as well. It's been really fun getting to know you a little bit here. And it's like, wow, I know a big time talk show host who's on like 300 radio stations. It's kind of cool.
Well, you should feel honored.
And I want you to know, I chose this shirt for today because you and I both have a love for the Gulf Coast of Florida. And I know that in your radio career, when you were spinning records, right, you were on that coast. And I love to get back there as often as I can.
Yeah, I worked in Fort Walton Beach.
That's where
I call that my first real radio job. So, and I lived in Navarre, and I know that you're out there. I see when you post that you're either in Destin or Fort Walton Beach, and
right.
Boy, that brings back memories because yeah. I haven't been back since '88.
Well, you know, my connection to that is my stepfather served at Eglin Air Force Base, and when he married my mom. You know, that became our vacation destination. So since the 70s, I've been going to Fort Walton Beach. In fact, I don't know if it was still there when you were there or not, but the motel that we stayed at, because, you know, he was a cop, didn't make a whole lot of money. We stayed at the Blue Horizon Motel on Okaloosa Island.
Yeah.
Well, now it's a little different. You know, we did our deal with Destin, and then 30A, which is to the east of Destin, is where we like to hang out. But that's why I'm wearing the shirt today. But for folks who don't know, you are the co-host of Westwood One's Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley. You're on every night, and you're really making a whole lot of sense. It's interesting to me because as a guy who plays music on the air, you know, we started this podcast the day that Joe Biden was inaugurated, and I wanted to, even though I'm very conservative, I consider myself a Reagan Republican, I wanted to give him every benefit of the doubt because he came out and he said, look, I want to bring the country together. I'm just Joe, and I want us all to get along and all that. And everything he has done since then has just contradicted that.
I mean, I've been covering politics now for, I've been doing this show for 34 years, but paying attention and doing a few other things because I was also the station manager of a news talk station. So I was over the news department. Knowing Joe Biden's record, I will say this. When you see Joe Biden's record in the past where he was, you could view him probably his legislative record, for example, the crime bill back in 94. And you could look at him and say, well, you know, he might be moderate. And whatever it is with him, whether, you know, he was never a moderate, because most people are not going to change their long-held views in their 70s. It just doesn't happen. People don't change that at that particular age. Where you are, where I am at this time in my life, I doubt that many of my core beliefs are going to change. And most people I know just don't. I would say, for him, I don't know whether it's his cognitive problems and he's being led this way, whether his ego is being fed by the people around him saying, go do this and you'll go down in history as a great president. Dale, when I look at this administration and liberalism in general, they tend to live in some kind of bubble. Of whether it's the bubble of D.C. or the bubble of New York or the bubble of Hollywood, the bubble of liberalism. It's really amazing how they seem to have no self-awareness as to how things work or how people actually feel in the country. I don't know if you saw Karine Jean-Pierre yesterday talking about the great economy, that people are really getting to understand how great it is.
Right.
These statements are delusional.
They are. And you don't hold back. I find this really interesting. And maybe I should back up the truck here a little bit and talk about Red Eye Radio a little bit, because, I mean, it is a full-on conservative talk show. How did it get there? How did it morph to there to where basically you're saying all the things that I agree with every night. I mean, your audience is truck drivers. I mean, that's where Red Eye Radio comes from. How did it morph into a full-on conservative talk show?
Well, when they asked me to come on in 2005, that was the goal would be, you know, we want to modernize, you know, we want to do a regular radio show, because what we even found out is, for example, would you listen to every single night a radio show on radio? Odds are you wouldn't. You know, let's talk the inside goings on of radio. You might listen to a podcast, you know, you might read an article, but you're not going to listen 5 hours a night. So we knew that this was at the time, this would have been ABC that we were working for, ABC Disney, believe it or not.
Wow.
And they had a ton of conservative stations, and they actually let us alone. They asked me to come on, and they thought that Eric and I would have great chemistry. And so it was a 7-year period before we actually got to Westwood One. And I've always thought, even when I was a local talk show host, one thing I think that, and I think you probably agree with this, every show you do, you sign your name to.
Right.
You know, this is my name. I don't use a fake name. You know, it's who
I
am. Exactly. And so you want to be who you are. You're signing your signature basically after every show. And one of the things we've talked about is not only are we conservative libertarian, but I'm not going to argue falsehoods. We talk about that a lot. I'm not going to lie. And that's one of the problems we have today, is the fact that when I first got into talk radio, we used to debate, all right, here are the facts. Why is liberalism better? Why is being a conservative better? Today, it's all fact-checking. We don't even argue what the truth is. The liberal, radical, transgender activist movement is one of those things. How can you have a debate on it when one side says, well, a biological man can be a biological woman if the biological man says so?
Yeah.
And so it really came from Eric and I, and I had more experience in that kind of talk radio, but Eric has a lot of life experience. But I think what happened is we had the chemistry from day one, and we knew it.
Yeah.
I don't know how we got the chemistry. It just happened.
Well, you do, for sure.
And we sort of read each other's mind, and finish. If one of us has mind blank, the other one finishes the sentence. So I think it was a combination of that. And as you know how we do the show, there's a lot of laughter.
Right.
Neither of us wanted to be angry all the time. I think if you're angry all the time and screaming all the time, you may be telling the truth, but nobody wants to hear it. Mm. But if you're, as we say, laughing, maybe more mocking than being furious, that I think that's actually more effective. It's more entertaining. And you can actually be extremely blunt. I think Dave Chappelle has proved that. You can be extremely blunt by doing people view as a positive show. I'll finish the show and I'll be driving home thinking, man, I was too angry today or whatever. And my emails will be, man, you guys were so funny today.
Yeah.
And the other thing is we'll be talking about and dissecting the minutiae of, the economy or the government figures coming out and getting into the minutia. And I'm thinking to myself, oh man, we're getting too far into it. And I'll get emails from people that your show was great when you talked about your dad.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think it's a combination. I think, you know, because, you know, look at you, look at what a star you are in Kansas City. And in order to do that, you've got to be an entertainer. No matter what you do, you've got to be an entertainer.
That's an interesting point. Limbaugh brought that up. And I look around, I listen around, and there aren't any successful liberal talk shows. I mean, NPR's out there, but that's NPR, National Public Radio, supported by us, by the way. You know, liberalism isn't funny. Liberalism isn't entertaining. All they want to do is whine about things all day long, and conservative talk seems to do very well. You guys do very well.
Isn't that natural? Because if you believe you're a victim,
Ah, there you go.
That's how you go through life. Every day, I'm a victim, I'm a victim, I'm a victim. How happy can you be?
They're not happy.
And so you have, and part of it, I think, is a brainwashing that we have in our schools today that, you know, everybody is a victim. And it's something we've talked about on the radio where we talked about the Democratic Party. And this goes back about 10 years and still, you know, looking at where we're going as a country. And it's like, how can you be positive? And I look at this and I say, well, because if you look at where the public stands on the actual issues and where the Democrats are.
Right.
The public doesn't agree with them. If you look at the Republican Party, they may hate the personalities. They may hate Trump. They may hate DeSantis. They may hate McCarthy. You know, the Democrats are very effective or have been very effective in demonizing them. But I think one of the great things that you've seen is, for example, the movement of Hispanics over the last 5 years. That's been monumental.
Yeah.
They've just rejected it. And what did they reject? They said, you know, a significant portion of them, they rejected, okay, you're just demonizing the personality. Where do they stand on the issues? I've said this about Trump. Trump is a moderate on the issues. He's not a radical. You know, I was just reading a thing today about, was it the Lordstown EV plant went bankrupt? Well, Trump was out there promoting that EV cars and the Lordstown plant was going to be great. You know, you do that as a Republican conservative and people look at that and go, well, that's not really the future yet. Mm. We can't get there yet. So, he's really isn't what you would view as a staunch conservative. And so it's his personality or they've been successfully able to demonize him. They tried it with Bush. You know, Bush was Hitler.
Right.
Trump was Hitler. DeSantis, they've taken a little change. Now, Eric did remind me on last night's show that they did call him Adolf, but they were trying to come up with a new one. So he was Mussolini.
Right.
So it's like, okay, you know, where do you go after this? Is it Satan next? How far do you go? But I think that wears out over time because the Democrats are no longer liberals.
Yeah.
They're insane. I mean, the issues that they stand for, and that may sound like over-the-top rhetoric if nobody ever has heard of me before. It's just a normal conservative. But when you actually break down the issues and you look at the radical liberal transgender activist movement, I mean, it's nuts.
It is nuts. Literally.
it's crazy. Yeah. So, you know, that critical race theory, you know, the concept that all white people have been so brainwashed and culturally, they've been brainwashed to be racist, that the entire society must be set up that all whites are racist. So all the rules and regulation and laws need to be set up that way. Well, that's just flat out wrong. People don't communicate, I believe, the way that the Democrats communicate what they believe. Most people get along. Doesn't matter whether, you know, what your skin color is, nationality. When you think about all the personal relationships that you have of people that are so different from you, and you know it because in your audience, especially, you know, for your music audience, you have a wide, you know, group of people that listen. And so you communicate with them all the time. And when you talk to them one to one, you get along.
Absolutely.
Families get along. My family, you know, my family probably is half conservative and half liberal because most of them are from New York. We're having a family reunion. It'll be completely respectful. People love each other. They care about each other. They're there to help each other no matter what, just like Americans when 9/11 happened and everybody got behind the victims and New York City. And when there's a tragedy, we throw politics aside. That's how we normally act. And the Democrats promoting the fact that you're a victim or you're an oppressor. And then, as we've stated before, you look at somebody like Martina Navratilova, who at one point was the hero for victims and the hero of the gay movement. And now she's viewed as an oppressor of the gay movement.
Transphobic.
She's transphobic. She's anti-gay. I mean,
it is crazy.
And it is crazy. It really is crazy. But so we So really, the show, to get back to it, because I only got 2 hours sleep, so if I start drifting off in different, just you can stop.
He's the
me.
Overnight guy. That's right.
Yeah. But I think that for Eric and I, it was just a combination of the way I was raised. I come from a father and a mother that, you know, right is right, wrong is wrong, and tell the truth. Because when I was a kid, you know, my dad used to say, you know, you're the biggest BSer, you know, when I was a teenager. And then he would compare me to this person that we know, that when my dad would say that to me, that cut deeper than anything my father ever said to me in my life. He said, he didn't say I was, you know, stop BSing, stop lying. He just said, you know, you remind me of this guy. And I could see through the guy, and I knew that people laughed at him. And when my father said that to me, that really stuck. Yeah. So I always said, the things that I believe in, I don't have to lie about. And, you know, that's becoming an adult. When you don't have to lie anymore, what a great thing when you don't have to lie. You don't have to lie about your own life. You don't have to lie about, you know, what you believe about anything, because, you know, the truth is all that matters to you.
You get to an age where it's like that. You know, one of the things, as you were talking, I was thinking about, was that the Democrats have actually, Kurt and I have talked about this on the podcast, they have taken something like MAGA and turned it into a slur. And if you break that down, MAGA is Make America Great Again. Who wouldn't want to make America great again? And they've turned it into a slur. It's like they own the language.
Well, I think with that one, what they did was, they just took the Make America Great Again and said, oh, you're talking about the racist past. When actually what Trump meant with MAGA was economics.
Right.
Let's get back to where we have a vibrant economy. And they just looked at that and they said it was the again that the Democrats took and said, oh, OK, you mean racism. You know, the interesting thing when you talk about Trump is, you know, how they, you know, he's a, call him a racist, but they call everybody a racist. It doesn't matter. But when you look at Trump and everybody that he's dealt with, I don't know of one racist complaint in all the years that Trump was in business. I don't think there was ever a racist complaint against him that ever became public, at least that I know.
Well, before he came out as a Republican, there were pictures of him with Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton backslapping him. He was giving money to them. I mean, they loved the guy until he was a Republican.
Yeah, but the thing is, outrage, like we said earlier on talk radio, outrage only, when you're outraged every single day, you sort of lose people. It's like, oh, I know what it's going to go. It's just anger every day, furious every day, whatever. We've always saw it on the show, too, when you talk about being blunt. It's not just being blunt. It's explaining things to people. One of the things that Eric and I had when we first started together is, let's see if we can explain something that's complicated very quickly. You know, can we take something that people just go, I'm not going to pay attention to it because I don't understand it. And the first thing we did was, and this was back a few years ago, but it was the debt, the national debt. You start talking the trillions and billions, that means nothing to anybody. Right. So we said, okay, let's do this a little bit differently. Let's look at, for example, we'll make it somebody who makes, maybe $32,000 a year. They're spending $50,000 a year. They have $320,000 in credit card debt, and they're going to have to pay off in the next 10 to 20 years, $1 to $2 million. And they really don't see an increase coming in, much of an increase coming in that $32,000. It may go $33,000 the next year, $34,000, but it keeps going up and up what you owe, for example, in your credit card debt of $320,000. And then your obligations, it'll be $1 to $2 million over the next, you know, 10 to 15 years. That put it in perspective, and that's simply taking off 8 zeros. And so we got a lot of compliments for that because then people understand it. But to be blunt now, you know, to be blunt, people may say, well, you're insensitive. And I don't think that's what we are. I think we're just blunt in saying, and it's easier to be blunt these days because you're just talking about the truth.
Right.
To be blunt, for telling the truth. Sorry, biological man cannot be a biological woman. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
You're transphobic. Well, do you believe that they can be a biological woman? Yeah. So you think women's opportunities should be taken away? Yeah. All right. Well, then you're a misogynist and you're a sexist and you're a femophobe. Now that we have finished the name calling, let's get into the science of it and try to debate it. And as you know, you saw last week, a couple of weeks ago in front of Congress, the one woman who attempted to the head of that, the pro-transgender activist who couldn't defend it. She said, well, you know, men and women basically, you know, have the same strength.
Yeah.
It's like, stop it. Physical strength.
One of my favorite things is when you start throwing facts at them, like you say we're going to go to EVs, 67% penetration by 2032, even though we're only at 1% now. We can't keep air conditioning running, you know, because there's not enough wind, there's not enough solar, and we're not energy independent anymore. But you think we're going to go to 67%. They look at you with a blank stare. And one of the things that they say, Kurt and I have fun with this, is it's settled science. It's settled science. You can't ask questions. And that's what we're doing on the podcast, Gary. We're asking questions all the time. They're just inconvenient questions.
Yeah. Eric said that the other day. And he goes, that's an inconvenient question. So I'm glad you said that, because a little bit of an offshoot of Al Gore.
Yeah.
What did he say? Was it inconvenient? No, Eric said inconvenient lie. That's what he said.
Ah, well, so it's true. I mean, you know, how are they going to do this? One of the podcast episodes we did, we had a car dealer on from Kansas City who has several different brands and deals with Detroit all the time. And I just wanted to ask him a bunch of questions that I have. I don't see how this is happening. And he brought up stuff that I hadn't even considered, like when these cars start running into each other, which will happen, it's going to be a hazmat deal. They're going to have to call out the hazmat team because of the batteries.
Oh, well, think about those batteries. This isn't talked about enough, but you can die. The voltage of those batteries can kill a human being.
Wow.
There's a ton of stuff that they haven't talked about. But when you think about, and we talked about this in the last couple of months, we had the Frizola here in Texas. We're based at, for anybody that doesn't know, we're based in Texas. We had the, as we call it, the Frizola. That, man, I'm telling you, it was a storm that rivaled anything that I went through growing up in Buffalo, or when I lived in Northern Illinois and had some of the cold back there in the early 90s. It was just, you know, very extremely bad. Well, because of that, the windmills, the wind turbines, right, froze up, and of course the solar panels were useless. And what people don't know is, when you give away free money, yes, Texans will take free money. And since we have, you know, all of the hills in central Texas, and also great plains in West Texas, where there's a lot of wind, we're the number one wind power state. Well, then they started closing down coal plants. And I remember in 2005, 2006 saying, you can't do this. You just can't do it. And so what happened then is they had some problems because they weren't investing into the gas power plants. They weren't doing capital investment because the government's telling them, you're all going to be closed down. Mm. You're not going to be around anymore. So what happened is, the only thing that could happen, you had blackouts. And now you've seen that all the grid operators and the watchdogs of all the grids across the United States are saying, get ready. It's going to get worse year after year after year, because they're shutting down coal plants. And in the state of Texas, this happened about a month ago. State of Texas said, okay, we got to do something. The federal government's giving out all this free money. So they're building windmills and solar panels. We can't stop them from doing it because of federal law. By law, they have to be able to hook up to the grid. So the only thing that we can do is, we've got to build 10 massive gas, you know, natural gas powered plants just for reserve. Since we're only going to be using them 10% of the time, we have to subsidize the natural gas powered plants for being the backup to the subsidized wind and solar. So they're going to subsidize everything across the board because they're only going to be using the gas powered plants 10% of the time. And then a couple of weeks later, the federal government came out with rules and regulations that would kill any chance to have those gas-powered plants as backups. So first off, the insanity of having gas-powered plants building a second huge redundant infrastructure to back up the inconsistent subsidized form of energy. You're subsidizing the primary form of energy, which can't be consistent, and the backup you're subsidizing across the board. And then the federal government comes in and says, well, we don't want you to have the gas-powered plants. The electricity isn't there. It's not going to be there to power the cars. It's not going to be there to power what we have right now if they continue on this.
Let me ask you this before we let you go, because I know you got a golf game you want to get to this afternoon, then you got to get some sleep so you can be on Red Eye Radio tonight on Westwood One, which in Kansas City is on KCMO, one of our competitors down the dial there at Cumulus, but that's what I listen to on my way into work. This presidential campaign, I know you've thought a lot about it, maybe handicap it a little bit. I mean, in my fantasy world, Gary, I'm more about policy, kind of like you. The personalities in it just really turn me off. I wanted to see Gavin Newsom take on Ron DeSantis. I'll have that argument every day with anybody. California and how they do things versus Florida and how they do things. We can have that argument every day. But it doesn't look like that's going to happen. It looks like it's going to be Trump-Biden part two. Would you agree?
I don't know. There's so much. The news is moving so fast. What happened on Friday, first off, earlier in the week when the WhatsApp message came out, and then it came out that the Senate, and this is the Senate from 2020. This was the Ron Johnson investigation when the Republicans had the Senate, when it came out a couple of days after, I forgot the timeline last week. But when it came out that, we had the money trail of where that money went, we had the account. So you have right now, and I think Democrats are scared to death right now, because what you have is Hunter Biden indicting his father.
Right.
In that WhatsApp message, he indicted his father and basically said, my father is godfather and also Luca Brasi here. He's the godfather. He's running this, and he's also the enforcer. And if you don't do it, when you actually look at that, if you're an investigator, you look and you say, what he is saying is that you need to pay either it's a quid pro quo for what we did for you when he was vice president just a few months before, or this is extortion. It's one or the other. It's a quid pro quo, the message that Hunter Biden gave. And so the fact that 100,000 went the next day, and then within 10 days, 5 million to that account, and they know what that bank account is, and they've done the money trail, that changes, I think, everything there. And then you have the Burisma bribe also. This is getting into territory. I don't think Democrats, I can't imagine them. Because think about this, Dale. A year from now, every single day, with more information coming out, I believe they're going to hold hearings probably in the fall or in the spring. I'm not sure. I don't know if Biden's going to be there at the end. I think that's why you've seen Newsom come back up. So I don't know there. And with Trump, that audio that came out yesterday,
that's not good either.
That's not good. That audio that came out, and still they have to prove that that's what he's holding in his hands, but on the obstruction charge. Now, they may not be able to get it because of the jury, in South Florida. They may not, or Fort Pierce, is it, I think? They're not going to have a favorable jury like they would have in Washington. But, I just don't know. I don't believe the polls now. I agree with some of the pollsters out there that say, Scott Rasmussen said this, don't pay attention to the polls now. Pay attention to the polls when you get to December, January, February, when the debates start and everything else, that people are not in the election mode right now. I thought looking for a type of candidate, DeSantis and his success that he had, especially bringing people from Democrats and independents aboard with him, that's great to have on your resume. Can he do that nationwide? It will be interesting. First, he has to convince Republicans that he is a guy. But I still look at what his kickoff was, DeSantis's kickoff, the way he did it on Twitter.
Yeah.
That was so badly managed. Lame. That was so. And so I really don't know. I think it's too early to tell. I really do. I
wonder if Trump is the nominee. You know, so many people didn't vote for him, voted against him to vote for Biden, of all things. Biden, you know, got more votes than anybody in the history of the country. Okay. What is his path to 270? What's going to take those people in the middle, you know, who voted for Biden instead of Trump? What's going to turn them back to Trump? What's his path to 270?
Biden stays in and they've convinced the American public he did take bribes.
Yeah. All right. Well,
I don't know how to answer that question besides that, because Trump would have to get more votes than he got back in 2020.
Or fewer people vote.
Yeah, because it could be, it may be that kind of an election. We could have that. I would just say that people aren't happy now. I think the other thing is inflation isn't going away.
No, it's not.
You know, inflation's still there. I notice it. I know you notice it. Every time you go, it doesn't matter how much money you make. It doesn't matter whether you're rich. Whatever you're doing, you notice the prices. People are, even billionaires are price conscious. They walk into the store and go, what the heck? It wasn't that way. And so it affects everyone. And so I still think inflation is a factor, but I still think that there's so much to go. I think maybe by January, maybe February, after you do a bunch of different debates, you know, again, will Trump be in the debates? I don't think there's any other Republican that Republicans care about, though, besides DeSantis and Trump.
So are you optimistic for the future of the Republic?
Well, I mean, no, just this election. Just this election, not the future of the Republic. By the way, before we go further, I mean, I was going to wear something else here. I wasn't sure what to put on.
Well, you're promoting your show.
Here
we go.
Just put that and just get up a little bit closer. So and see it, put on my Bills hat. I was thinking, by the way, congrats on the Super Bowl win last year.
Yeah.
I'm an old AFL guy.
Right.
So someone's going to win the Super Bowl. It might as well be Kansas City, but I also like how the organization is run. I like how the Kansas City is running their organization. I like how the Bills are. I like how they're moving away from all the stuff that was going on a few years ago. I tell you this, so I was telling a few of my buddies, I said, yeah, I'm going to be doing a podcast with Dale Carter. You know, he does the in-stadium announcing. He's a public address announcer there at Arrowhead. And I said, really?
Well, you wore your hat. I could have worn my Super Bowl 54 ring. I don't have my Super Bowl 57 ring yet. It's coming.
Well, I'll tell you this one thing. All Kansas City Chiefs fans they owe the Buffalo Bills organization, because if it wasn't for Ralph Wilson, the Kansas City Chiefs would not exist. The Las Vegas Raiders would not exist. The New England Patriots would not exist. The Bills would not exist, because I think it was either 62 or 63. They were going under. Billy Sullivan of the Patriots couldn't pay his bills. And I don't know who owned Oakland at the time, but Ralph Wilson loaned, I think, Billy Sullivan, I think it was like $200,000.
Wow.
Otherwise, they would have collapsed and Oakland would have collapsed and the league would not be in existence.
Well, we had Lamar Hunt. He had billions.
Oh, yeah. You know, he did. But I mean, but he was part, you know, he was actually, you think about it, but Lamar Hunt, Ralph Wilson, I mean, those were two of the leaders of the Foolish Club.
Yep, they were.
You know, they called them the Foolish Club, because it was like they can't do it. But I actually love the rivalry. I really
it's
love
a good
the rivalry.
One. Yep.
I really like it. And there seems to be a great mutual respect of the fans towards one another. I've talked to people that went, you know, and have been at Arrowhead, and they've said it might not be the same if you go to Buffalo, but I know it was. I know when fans went to Arrowhead, they said it was, you know, it was a great time.
Yeah, we don't have that with the Bengals right now. That's kind of a bad rivalry. But that's another story.
Yeah. I I can see that, but you know, but I like what, you know, with Damar Hamlin, that whole thing last year. I like the goodwill of the people of Cincinnati, and I like the reaction of everybody. I mean, I like, hopefully sports is going where I like, which is not in an attempt to divide, but in an attempt to bring people together and communities together, because you know it. You know that when you're in Arrowhead, it's like the same. I haven't been back to Buffalo in a long time, but when I had my season tickets, you know, you walk in that to that stadium, it's football, but it's also a great sense of community. And it really is. And you know it when we win the Super Bowl like Kansas City did. It's a great feeling. It's a great feeling of together.
It is.
You know, that's why when they lose, it's those guys. And when they win, it's we, you know, all together.
Yep.
So congratulations. Well,
thank you.
And I just want to say that I'm so happy that you're doing this podcast. And, you know, when you reached out to me initially, it was both Eric and I, you know, when you first reached out to us, I think I read it to Eric, you know, the nice things that you said about our show. And I love that you're doing this, because we need more voices and we need more strong voices. And podcasting is, you know, where it's going. And so the fact that, you know, you're doing this and Kurt's helping you so much, I've got to make sure that I...
Absolutely. And if you'll give us a shout out on your 300 stations in the overnight show, we might actually grow our audience.
Yeah. Well, hey, but just wait a minute. You, every time, you've done it a couple of times, you've gone to the pizzeria, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
one of our sponsors.
It's like, I'd like to go and do, you know, we don't get to do those things because we work over. One of the things when you work overnights, when I used to work during the day, I would do probably, you know, I'd probably do two or three speeches, lunches, whatever. When you work overnights, it's really everything, you know, TV, everything that I used to do stops. It's almost impossible to do. Thank goodness you were able to, you know, you said, you know, I said, what about 11? You go, that 11 would be great. That's my window is like 11 to 12:30, and that's it.
We made it work.
Because it's so demanding. But
well, one of these times when we do the pizza deal, we do it a couple of times a year. They've got two locations in our area. We'll have you come in. We'll invite you. You can come in and meet all the folks here in Kansas City. Don't wear the hat, though. Hey, Gary, thanks so much for spending the time with us. I'm really a fan. Please give my best to Eric. My best to your dad, too. I know you get back to Buffalo to see him as often as possible. Really enjoyed spending the time with you here today.
Well, we love everybody in Kansas City. We love our listenership there. And you've done, I mean, you own that city. You know, just congratulations on your great success and just the person that you are. Even though we've never met each other, we've communicated enough where I think we have an idea, of what we're about, what our makeup is about. And I really appreciate everything that you do.
All right.
So
Gary McNamara, thank you so much for joining us, sir.
Thanks, Dale.
One of our fine sponsors at Dale Carter's America, new to the program as well, is Kirk Doris with MedicareSimplifiedKC.com. That is a mouthful, and we're going to get into what it all means. But first of all, thanks for believing in what we do, and welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for doing what you do.
Yeah. Well, we've done it since we went on the air on the day Joe Biden was inaugurated, and we tried to give him a shot, and it's just like every day is another thing, and we're not going to get into all that with you, because you do something that's very important, something that I'm thinking about a lot. I'm going to turn 60 in September, so I'm getting close, right?
You got a ways to go.
65 is what we're talking about?
Normally 65.
Yeah. That's when Medicare kicks in.
It can, but you can also defer it.
Yeah. You know, Ronald Reagan once said the 9 most dangerous words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
Exactly.
And these are government programs. And your company specializes in taking all the gobbledygook from the government and making some sense out of it.
Yeah, we try to make it, you know, what does this mean to me? How do I fit in this picture? And it is convoluted.
Yeah. So what are some of the issues as people are approaching 65 that they ought to be thinking about?
Well, a lot of people now with the changes to group health insurance, it's expensive. It's the benefits have more or less eroded over time. So a lot of people are working past 65 because they can't afford to retire, or they have a spouse, that's younger than them, and they depended upon that group health plan for that spouse until they become eligible for Medicare. So a lot of people are evaluating the benefits of Medicare against their group health insurance to decide whether they leave a group health plan and take advantage of Medicare, or do they need to stay on the group health plan to take care of that spouse, or, you know, they're making that evaluation.
Well, let me give you a case in point. My wife is 6 years younger than I am. So what is that going to mean for me when I'm getting close to 65?
Well, if you leave a group health plan, she can cover to the group health plan, but she's going to pay the full boat. And she can only
she cover me with her job?
If you, yeah, you could go on her group health plan.
Yeah.
If the spouse has employment, chances are they have group health insurance, right. So it's not a factor.
Yeah.
But those that are not employed, that are on this other spouse's group health plan, that's a factor.
Yeah. So is that something I should look at doing if she's got group health insurance rather than go Medicare? Should I stay on group health insurance as long as possible? Or is that something that you can't answer without all the specifics?
It's an evaluation of the benefits of that group health plan. Yeah. Chances are Medicare may be a better benefit package than a high deductible with a group health plan, et cetera. It depends on the health status of the individual, what they're paying for that group health coverage, the benefits of Medicare, and it's that evaluation process that is an individual process because one size doesn't fit all.
Right. When folks reach out to you at 816-701-6661 or, of course, online at MedicareSimplifiedKC.com, take me through that. You know, when somebody calls you and says, hey, I'm facing all this stuff, I have no idea what any of it means, where do you take them from there?
Normally, we're gonna ask some questions. And where are you at in that process? Are you approaching Medicare? Are you already 65? What's that time period to be eligible for Medicare? What's your particular circumstances? Are you working? Are you not working? What's the immediate plans down the road? Your health status? What's going on with you? And normally, what we're looking for is to get with that individual and get those facts and see how it pans out for them.
Now, one of the things that you say in your talking points to me is that services are provided at no cost. How do you do that?
Our compensation comes through the insurance products that an individual selects. There's commission built into those products, and that's where our fees are paid.
You've been at this a while.
I've been in the insurance business since I retired from the Air Force in 1994.
Yeah.
I was on the group health side for over 20 years here in Kansas City, and with the changes to group health plans, with the Affordable Care Act, I elected to go strictly to Medicare.
Yeah, and you saw that there was quite a need for this.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well, reach out to Kirk. He is a sponsor on Dale Carter's America. We appreciate you being part of the program and believing in what it is that we're doing here. And MedicareSimplifiedKC.com is the best way to reach you on the internet, right? Or call.
Call's always good.
All right. So we'll give out the phone number one more time, 816-701-6661. We appreciate you being part of the podcast and wish you the best of luck.
Thank you so much.
The views expressed on Dale Carter's America are Dale's and Kurt Wheeler's. They do not necessarily reflect the views of KFKF or Steel City Media. Comments can be sent to DaleCartersAmerica@gmail.com. Check back for weekly episodes. Subscribe, spread the word, and give us a 5-star review. Thanks for being a part of Dale Carter's America.